Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley sitting in for Wendy. Wendy Snyder will be back with me on Monday. Yesterday was a very trying, very difficult day for most of Chicago. We're all aware of what happened. The McDonald's shooting, the Van Dyke court case that's still coming up. Dr. Leon Finney joins us right now. Dr. Finney is a pastor of the Metropolitan Apostolic Church, a professional organizer and an expert in terms of protests and rallies. First of all, Dr. Finney, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
We really appreciate it. Yesterday was a very, very hard day.
Yes.
I thought, as just a Chicagoan, I was bracing for the worst, and as serious and awful as the entire story is, things went pretty well when you really step back and look at them, don't you think?
Well, I think this. I think that Chicagoans at this particular point are thoughtful. Let's hope it continues to be such.
Yeah.
I think that it is important for protests to be. And I believe that since I'm a product of the civil rights movement, beginning in 1955, and I remember that it took us 10 years to get the 1964 Civil Rights Act signed into law.
Yeah.
It took us 11 years to get the 1965 Voting Rights Act signed in law. Now, what does that mean? And I'm laying the foundation for something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I happen to have worked on the Metcalf police reform effort in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
I have a copy of the report that's with me. But the important thing is that in 1973, we had this problem of misconduct of police officers. And unfortunately, it has not gone away.
Right.
And there are two reasons for why it has not gone away. One is that the prosecutor, who in this instance would be the state's attorney, who has the fiduciary jurisdictional responsibility, and note I use the word jurisdictional,
mm-hmm.
responsibility to prosecute quickly any problem as relates to a criminal activity, certainly when it rises to a killing, and certainly when it rises to the possibility of a law enforcement officer being involved.
Mm-hmm.
She had the first responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she had the same evidence that she had that she stood on yesterday,
mm-hmm.
13 months ago. So the question is, why did she choose not to prosecute, or why not to go to a grand jury?
Right.
Now let's take another look at it. What happened in Ferguson? Right.
Mm-hmm.
In Ferguson, the state's attorney in Missouri, in St. Louis County,
mm-hmm.
had Darren Wilson before the allegations before the grand jury within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now we are not happy that it did not come out for an indictment, but the point is the power of the state's attorney to bring forth an investigation and to seek a speedy trial is always first and foremost.
Can I tell you as the story was going on, and I knew the basis of the story, but I was learning more as I was watching the news, and I'm finding out about Officer Van Dyke still on duty, desk duty, not on patrol, but still on desk duty and still getting paid. I was very upset about that. But then I thought, realistically, as much as we knew about it, there had been no court case. He hadn't been prosecuted yet.
Well, see, that's the challenge, and sometimes we get ill-informed. There are those who want to make this a political move.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are those who are saying, well, you know, if the prosecution had gone forth, then maybe it would have compromised somebody's election. Well, guess what? Somebody's election is going to be compromised in a very short order, and that person is going to be the state's attorney, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she comes up for election March of 2016,
yeah.
Right? So if you want to say political, why does she sit on it? Or she sit on it just to help Rahm Emanuel? I don't think so. I think that she sat on it because she was also concerned about her own political future. But anyway, let's then move to the next part of what I think we have to talk about, my friend.
All right.
And that is, what about the police department and what about its actions and what inactions, right? Well, at the end of the day, as long as you don't have an independent civilian police review board that is not accountable to the police department, I think we're going to have a problem. And we pointed out in 1973 that we needed an independent civilian police review board. The current police review process looks like this. Out of 10,000 cases that have been brought before it within the last 10 years, it has found cause to discipline a law enforcement officer for less than 1% of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
That many complaints couldn't be wrong. So something is not right, and it has to be fixed with the police department. And my sense is there are day in and day out complaints that don't rise to murder that somehow or another get swept under the rug by a police review board that that is controlled by the police department that does not do its job. And my sense is we have to have a different kind of police report. So here are two things that we got to remember.
Mm-hmm.
One, if I'm a law enforcement officer and I know that I can commit a murder and not get indicted by the police officer, what is the to prevent me from doing that, right?
Right.
However, and if I know as a police officer that I've that consistently for 18 times I have not been disciplined for 18 complaints that have been brought brought by the citizens of the city of Chicago, and this is Van Dyke, 18 times I have never been disciplined by the review board that is in place. What is the what discourages me from taking the law in my own hand if I choose to? And so my sense is you got two things that have got to be fixed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to fix the disciplinary operation that operates within the confines of the police department. Then you got to fix the state's attorney's office. And I'm told by attorney Lewis Myers, who is a professor of criminal justice at Chicago State and an expert in this whole area of litigation as it relates to police misconduct, that in fact the state's attorney's office had the primary responsibility, not the legislature nor the mayor, had the primary responsibility to prosecute and go and take to a court of law Van Dyke.
What? Pardon me, what did go on last night? Well, we call it a demonstration or a rally or a gathering of people who were definitely wanting to be heard. What exactly were they out for? He had been charged. He's been held without bond, the Van Dyke. I just wanted to know what exactly they were hoping to accomplish.
Okay, so here's the deal. The quick answer is I don't know, but
okay.
Let me speculate.
All right.
All right. And the speculation is that I think that the Constitution of the United States of America provides under the First Amendment the right of peaceful assembly to protest whatever we as Americans choose. And that goes for you and me, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to have a reason necessarily that's rational to anybody else, right?
Okay.
As long as we want to exercise our First Amendment rights, we can do that. My sense is that here you have a situation where there was the people who were out there probably felt that they ought to do something, especially since you have so much talk right now about the mistreatment of African-American males by the law enforcement officers, and going back to Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Ferguson with Michael Brown, mm-hmm. and then Eric Gardner in New York. And you can see that there is a sense of a pattern that we have to address, in my judgment. And I think that that's kind of the climate that we're operating in, and therein would be the cause for demonstrations.
Mayor Emanuel called you in recently.
Yes.
To talk about what the end result could be of this case. What was that conversation like?
Well, he didn't call me into a private conversation.
It was a group conversation.
All right.
You were part of a group.
Yeah.
The thrust was what exactly? Was it a scenario of what could potentially happen?
I think that the mayor wanted to explain to some people who may be leaders, and I'm not sure that I fall in that category. I'm more of an organizer than a leader. But anyway, I think that he was concerned about what would happen once the videotapes were out. But let me put it this way: I was there and witnessed the West Side go up in flames in 1968.
Yeah.
I remember when the mayor of the city of Chicago issued the order, shoot to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the mayhem that resulted. I remember the great, I remember subsequent the war protesters and the conflict that was in Grant Park. So I'm pretty much schooled about what happens in reaction to disasters, right? The 1964 riots that swept the United States of America from one coast to the other, from Los Angeles on the West Coast all the way to New York and Harlem on the East Coast, from Jacksonville, Florida, down south, mm-hmm. all the way to the Midwest, the city of Chicago, and up into Detroit, right? Not into Canada, all right? Mm-hmm. So that's when we had riots happening all over the United States of America in reaction to the assassination of an icon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my sense is you want to be careful about how you judge the possibility of a riot. Right. Now, I did not go out and get riot gear. All right. And I'm an old guy, but I spent my time in the United States Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a pretty old tough customer when it comes to being willing to stand up to conflict. But at the end of the day, I didn't, because I really didn't in my heart of hearts feel that at this particular moment we were going to end up with a riot. Now, what I do think is this. There is a great deal of discontent among the populace here in the United States of America, but particularly Chicago, about the killings that happen day in and day out in the neighborhoods that we got to go to.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge problem. And my sense is that when we talk about what we're focusing on, we're focusing on a society that has grown to accept killings as a normative action in this particular time. That's a tough pill to swallow.
As disturbing as could possibly be.
Yeah, it's a tough pill. But, you know, the bottom line is that it has become acceptable behavior. And for some of my brothers that that are out there, tend to get involved in trouble, and some are involved in activities that lead to violence or lead to them doing something illegal, I got to say to them, I would hope that they would have the same concern about the children and the families that live in our various communities about their safety as they are about being able to do what they do on a normal day-to-day basis and not shoot each other.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Finney, you're okay on time. We can keep you for a little bit. Steve Bertrand, our newsman, has a question or two for you as well, but let's take a quick break and we'll get to those questions. And then if you want to jump in at home, 312-981-7200, you can call in or text in. Our guest is Dr. Leon Finney, pastor of the Metropolitan Apostolic Church, expert on protests and rallies, a professional organizer himself. We'll continue this conversation in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley. Hannah's sitting in for Wendy Snyder, who will return with me on Monday. Our guest in studio right now is Dr. Leon Finney. Dr. Finney is a pastor of the Metropolitan Apostolic Church. He's an expert on protests and rallies, a professional organizer himself, and we're discussing what has been going on here in the city the past couple of days and beyond. Steve Bertrand, our newsman, has a question or two for you, Dr. Finney.
Mr. Finney, good afternoon.
Hi, Steve.
So I'm interested in your balance. You know, I mean, you were standing behind Mayor Emanuel yesterday, and here you are today, you know, offering full support for protests. And I understand those aren't mutually exclusive, but just tell me a little bit about where your balance is between those two positions.
Well, I don't have to worry about balance, because I can at the one time respect the mayor of the city of Chicago if he calls for me to stand and help to inspire peace. And the next moment, I can be involved door-to-door in door-to-door campaigns to try to make sure that we get social justice through social activism. So I don't see any contradiction at all. I didn't stand there. Nobody asked me to say anything.
Yeah, no,
hold on. But if I had to say something, I'm not sure. I think that I would have come very close to saying what I've said just now.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to imply that you were doing anything wrong. I just sort of interested in where you are between those. One thing that's happened since you started talking to the guys downstairs is Laquan McDonald, the young man who had a felony charge brought against him, Malcolm London, has had that charge dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in court today, and he had been charged with attacking a police officer. That was dropped in bond court today.
Sure.
So last night, your assessment of how the protests went, I would imagine, is a fairly positive one.
Yeah, I said on the air, I mean, earlier to a question, I think that this one, in terms of the protests, so far has been within the bounds of our Constitution. Peaceful protest, and that's the First Amendment. Let's hope that that pertains. Let's hope that kids, and often kids can do something that things that are provocative, to do things. And I was just about to say that I had some kids out in front of my church at the bus stop, and they were trying to, when we called the cops to make sure that they were safe, they began to try to tease the cops and be provocative. Now, if you got a hair trigger cop and he gets teased by some kids, not touched but teased, they could get crazy.
Sure.
So you got to remember that kids are going to be kids, 17, 18 years old, they'll be kids. But as long as I think the cooler heads are there, I don't think that there's cause for the kind of riots that we saw in 1968 when Dr. Martin Luther King, an icon, was assassinated. I don't think that this rises to that. I think that, unfortunately, killings have gotten to, in the black community, have gotten to be almost acceptable. And that's a tragedy.
It is
daily
a tragedy.
Killings. And these are not killings by the police department. These are killings by blacks killing blacks.
We have every line filled. People want to talk to you, Dr. Finney. Let's start out with Paula on line four. Paula, yep. Hi, you're on with us, and Dr. Leon Finney. Go ahead, please.
Yes, doctor. I wondered if it would be advisable to have more African-American police on the force, and therefore that would take the edge off of this race difference.
Paula, that is probably the most profound question I could be asked today. In 1973, when we did the police reform report, that was a strong recommendation that there be more police officers of African-American descent or ethnic groups hired, trained and hired and placed on the police force. Unfortunately, the ranks of our law enforcement officers at this particular point has severely diminished when it comes to the incidents of or the presence of African-Americans on the police force. That has to change in order to bring about balance and civility to our community.
Well, why aren't there more? I thought I had heard or read that there are requirements, and some of them are academic requirements and physical, et cetera, that weighs into whether people become a police officer.
Well, I think, and that's another good observation. Thank you. I think that gets back to the credibility of the office, right? If you have a body or a group that is viewed as negative, by another group of people, why would you want to be a part of them?
Well, to help your own people.
No, but my point is, why would you want to be?
Why subject yourself?
What the point is that you have a lot of, we have in many, this instance, the sense is that the law enforcement officers that are policing the African American community are not sensitive to the African American community, and you don't see enough African American patrolmen on duty, and so you're talking about asking someone to join in instances a white operation that is to over police the African American community. So that's one downer.
Well, I guess so, but in my mind, then how much does the African American community want to help each other to get rid of the killing of the young people.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I'm glad you say it in your mind. Clearly that it would not be a question that would be in an African-American person's mind. But in your mind, it seems to be irrational. My point on this one is that I encourage, and we are going to be setting up, we are setting up workshops to encourage African-Americans to do, in fact, apply to go to the take the test. To coach them as to making sure that they understand the test and to be there for them once they have passed the test. And what we are finding too often is that even if an African-American does get on the list and become part of the pool, rarely do they get called. And that's something that's got to happen on the inside of the police department.
Paula, thank you for the call. We're out of time, but thank you so much for the call. Great questions, all of them. We have so many people on the line, Dr. Finney, but we sadly don't have enough. Can I just get Tony really quick?
Yeah.
Tony, I only have less than a minute, Tony, but you're bringing up a good point, so I wanted to run it past Dr. Finney. Go ahead, Tony. What did you want to say?
Thank you. I'm African-American male, and my point is that we sort of, in a way, we localize this and we trivialize this by making it a black and white issue. Outrage should be national. It should be national, and it should be national on a high level. This isn't about African-Americans joining together to protect another African-American. This is about the murder of a young man by a federal police officer.
That's the primary issue, isn't it, Dr.
Okay,
Finney?
Tony, I couldn't agree with you more. And everything about me...
Yeah, that's all right.
You're okay.
Everything about me, Tony, would suggest that that's where I am. I marveled at what happened when the when the kids in Washington, D.C., the young people, the millennials, after Ferguson and after the choking in and I Can't Breathe,
yeah.
When you saw on the Capitol steps at least 500 whites and blacks and Latinos in protest saying we can't breathe.
Right.
I welcome the day when blacks and browns and whites can join together and work in order to make our society a civil society. And it's going to take all of our races and all of our ethnic groups. And I'm with you 100%, Tony.
Tony, thanks for the
call.
Thank
you so much.
Have a great holiday. Dr. Finney, an honor to meet you. This was a rough couple of days for the city and for everybody all over the place. And, you know, we're all trying our best to make some sense of it. So thanks for coming and adding to
it. Okay. All right.
Really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank
Dr.
Leanne
Finney, pastor of the Metropolitan Church, the Apostolic Church. We're going to take a quick break and then more show ahead. Stay where you are. It's WGN.